No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to BigHeadsMedia.com for more great podcasts.
Swing and a line drive, left field. Benintendi coming on, dives, and did he make the catch? He did! He got it!
Here we go. It's time to party. Right here. 3-2.
High drive! He crushed it! It's a grand slam!
Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! Sox have won the world championship.
Welcome to Benny and the Bets podcast.
Can you believe it?
Here's your host, Terry Cushman.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 155th edition of the Benny and the Bets podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball. For everyone staying up late tonight on Periscope, the podcast, as always, can be found on SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, Spreaker, Google Podcasts, and of course, Apple Podcasts. The link to our Apple Podcasts feed is right above your video window. Click that, subscribe. All of our previous shows are available. The Red Sox just wrapped up a 4-game set against the New York Yankees, taking 3 out of the 4 games. They are 9 back of the division lead right now and only 1 game out of the second AL wild card. I am Terry Cushman and I'm joined as always by Jeremy Schilling and Matt Clark. How are you guys?
Yeah, man, definitely better than expected.
Well, I was happier yesterday. tonight I'm thinking about after the podcast, maybe pouring a little bleach in my eyes to wash away the filthiness that I saw in this ugly game from the Red Sox tonight. But other than that, I'm good.
Yeah.
Hey Terry. You know, you notice how Matt chirps pretty fucking hard when we're winning and everything's rosy, and then things go back to normal, and all of a sudden I don't hear a fucking tweet from him all night.
Yeah, and I'm the opposite. You know, I like to. I chirp when we suck, but, you know, we are coming off of the loss tonight. Maybe we'd be thumping our chests if we lost the first game and then won the next 3, but nonetheless, you take 3 out of 4. We had only had 1 win against them all season, so you know, not too bad, and we got Tampa next, who we can try to do more damage against, and then 4 more next weekend, although I think one of them is a doubleheader, but we can still chip away for now. So anyway, we're going to get into Heroes and Zeros. We'll discuss what we think maybe the next Red Sox trade will be. some insiders seem to think there's one more move imminent, so we'll go over that and talk about some other trades that took place. So, Jeremy, go ahead. Into heroes, who do you got?
So, I mean, there's any number of options in this series, obviously. Betts, Leon, just kidding. Devers, Bogarts, Martinez, Benintendi. I mean, you know, Moreland hit a ball hard tonight. Holt, you know, hits the ball hard all the time. But I felt like the guy who set the tone was Porcello in a situation where he could have folded, but didn't, and allowed the offense to get going. Not a great start by, you know, everyday metrics. He had a quality start, 6 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs, all earned, a base on balls, 5 walks, and gave up the home run. His ERA is deplorable. He should be ashamed of himself. He's cost himself a ton of money, probably tens of millions of dollars. But for this series, he did what he had to do, which was he battled out of a jam when the game was still in doubt, and then pitched deep enough into the game to allow Hernandez, Brewer, and Eovaldi to come in and throw effortless innings to get into what was a successful series. So, wasn't the best start. I wouldn't say he's back, but for purposes of what we needed in this series, I thought Porcello played an important role setting up what was a successful series. So, Rick Porcello, not great, but for setting the tone for what was a great series, he's my hero.
Yeah, was it the second or third inning when he had the bases loaded and get out of the jam?
It was third inning,
yeah. And
brutal,
you know,
absolutely brutal.
Right, and it seems like he's walked the tightrope in a lot of starts this year, and kind of just fallen off it at one point, and had a 3 or 4 run inning, and this time through he got all the way across. Kept us in the game, you know, only gave up the 3 earned runs. So I'm not comfortable, like Jeremy, saying he's back, but it was a big start in a big series, and he got the win.
All I got to say is I kind of nailed that one. I may have called that. I was off by 1 earned run on that, but I definitely said you keep him in the game, 6 innings pitch, get the win. I think I predicted 2 earned runs, but I'm gonna tally that to a really crappy call by the ump on a timeout to LeMahieu that was way late. Otherwise, he would have struck out instead of walked, and it would have been 2 earned runs. So I guess when prognosticating, I didn't see that one, so fault me for that. But no, I felt like he had one in him. Like I said, he pitches shitty for 6 starts and then has a good one, so... I guess we'll have to wait for 7 starts before we see this again, but that's okay. Hey, we'll take it against the Yankees.
Well, he does tend to pitch better at home, so, you know, we got 3 more here, and he will pitch against Tampa before we head to New York. So, you know, so maybe he can kind of carry it into the next series. Matt, who do you have?
I'm going to go with Andrew Benintendi. He went 10 for 18, 555 average, 8 runs scored, 2 home runs, albeit one of them was kind of a very cheap home run, but we'll take it. 6 RBIs. Since he switched his batting stance back to the old college stance, shortened his stride and leg kick, he kind of looks like the Benintendi of old. I mean, guy smashing the ball. The Red Sox can get him and J.D. Martinez and Betts playing up to the caliber that they played last year. I mean, obviously, this offense, if Devers and Bogarts continue on the pace they've been playing at, and Holt and Chavis and all these guys, you know, Vasquez having career years, you add those three in there getting back to their normal selves, which it definitely looked like this series, and this offense is as dangerous as anybody out there. So... you know, it's good to see that. I've been waiting for it all year. I'm a huge Benintendi guy. So to see him really tear it up is a good sign. And this guy could be a catalyst. I mean, in the beginning of the year, he was your leadoff man. They held him in that high of regard. So To see him all of a sudden taking off, that's a good sign. I think it'll carry over into hopefully the rest of the year and really be a positive for the Sox going forward.
Jeremy?
I mean, I'm a huge Benintendi guy, and I love what he can bring when he's going right, and it's nice to see him hit the ball out of the ballpark. You know, it's one of those funny things with baseball that when you're really scuffling, what gets you out of the scuffle is usually not a laser into the alley. It's some duck fart to right center that drops in, and all of a sudden the stress is relieved and you're free and clear for that game. So you end up going, 3 for 4 with, two balls in the gap later. That's the way it always was for me when I played. And the home run, the way it happened and everything else, and him finally hitting one, regardless of the length and all the other horse shit that goes into the dialogue about that particular swing, it frees a player up to say, okay, I've already accomplished something. I've contributed. And then it's in baseball players' minds, they relax and they start hitting. So then he's hitting ball, tonight he had another base hit opposite way. And he's capable of hitting a base hit to the left field line, to the right field line, and a home run anywhere out of the ballpark, which is really impressive for a guy his size. But to the latter point, he is hugely important, and I'd love to stick him back in the two hole and let him roll. And if he can get going, that's where he's going to end up. So also creates some flexibility with the ability to play center field if Jackie goes into one of his deep slumps. So if we can get Benintendi back to what he's capable of being, and I think that's one of the things we're going to talk about in this podcast is, what it's going to take to get where we want to go. Benintendi's got to be one of the guys that gets himself going. So totally agree. Big, big series. Nice to see these series against the Yankees, too. It's always easy to go 5 for 10 against the Orioles, the Royals, the hacks of the league. But to do it against this team, against, the pitching's not great. And I think we're going to talk about that, too. But against the Yankees in a big series, a series you got to win multiple games, you got to win the series. He was a huge factor, so 100% on Matt's hero.
Yeah, it seems like he's squaring the ball up a little bit better now. He was getting underneath it too much and flying out quite a bit, and he didn't look too comfortable in the batter's box at times, but he really has picked it up the last few series. And I think the fact that Alex Cora started Benintendi against Sabathia last night, a lefty, shows that, the confidence is rising, with both the manager and the player in this instance.
Yeah, and he should be in every – look, he's a plug-and-play guy. He bets Devers, Bogarts, Martinez – and in my opinion, Vasquez are plug and play. Don't fuck with him. Put him in a spot. Leave him there. Let him get comfortable. Let him get, 25, 30 at-bats a week, whatever it is. And Benintendi can hit lefties. And the guys I just mentioned all hit productively, regardless of the arm slot. So, yeah, I mean. And by the way, here's the other thing with Benintendi. Benintendi has huge implications moving forward as far as his signability with arbitration left, the desire to keep him here long term. So for him to find a slot that makes a lot of sense may make him feel more comfortable in signing and the Red Sox giving him a fair deal, which is what I think everyone wants. So, that's another thing that maybe is for a different podcast, but it's important to this team and this program moving beyond 2019 and 2020.
Going back, go ahead, Matt. I'm sorry.
I was going to say one thing. I know Jeremy said that if he continues this pace, he'd put him at the two hole. I'm not sure that I would. I think that the having that top three of Mookie, Devers, and Bogarts is pretty damn good right now. I think I'd keep rolling with those guys as your 1-2-3. Martinez is 4, and Benintendi is 5. That's as good as any five top five players in the lineup that any team has. So if it's rolling and they're rolling like this, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's kind of my thing. And as much as he kind of gives you that speed option a little bit more than maybe Devers does at the top of the lineup, you know, middle of the lineup or right around in that five hole, that's not a bad option either. That's just my personal opinion. I don't know that I'd mess with them at this point, given how hot and how well they've been playing with the 1-3 batters.
Well, that's what I was about to get at, and I personally like Benintendi in the two-hole better because he's more of a contact guy. He typically has a 360, 370 on base. I don't know what it is this year. It's probably down a little. But I kind of like the dynamic of him and Mookie getting on base, and then you'd probably have JD in the three-hole to slot in between Benny and Devers. That way you're, you know, staggering the righties and lefties. I do get, though, that, you know, it might not be a popular move with some fans and maybe some hardcore stat geeks to take Devers out of the two-hole where he's hit so well, you know, since being put there. But I think Devers is a guy who can hit no matter where he is. I don't think that dynamic screws with him the way it might, you know, Mookie or Benny. And it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out once Benintendi, you know, increases his consistency with productivity. I don't know. What do you think about the alignment, Jeremy? You kind of alluded to it, but.
You mean as far as his spot in the batting lineup? To me, he's the best at the two spot because of his ability to. Not that we're an old school team, and not that he's bunting or anyone in this lineup is bunting, but he has the ability to hit and run because he can hit the ball on the ground at any spot in the infield. He doesn't swing and miss at a high rate, so it gives you a little bit of flexibility to do some things with Betts now back in the leadoff spot, potentially running with Bradley Jr. hitting ninth, potentially running. And so I just like him there. And honestly, what I would do is I would slot Devers three, flip Bogarts behind Martinez, hit Bogarts fifth. And to me, that's your best lineup. To me, that evens out the lineup. You go right, left, left, right, right. So to me, it just makes a ton of sense. Now, one thing I will say is Benintendi still has a long ways to go because he's still only OPSing 777, which is just about 20 to 25 points higher than the major league average this year. So it just goes to show you the struggle. You know, for context, Betts is 874, which is about 130 points better. Devers is 945. I mean, he's a borderline MVP. Bogart's 975. He may be even more than a borderline MVP if Trout takes a step back. I mean, that's an elite OPS, and Martinez is an 885. So just, you know, just to go to show you, I mean, even Holt, Moreland, and Vasquez are all 820 to 850. So he's had a down year, but to Matt's point, if he can trend in the right direction, he can be one of the things that is better than it's been and projects you into potentially a wild card spot, because we're going to talk about how some of the other teams that were ahead of us in the wild card are not playing so well anymore.
Matt, any more thoughts on Benintendi?
No, I mean, other than, I guess I can see the case to have him be at number two. I guess he is more of a natural number two hitter now that I think about it. And you have more of a power guy in a Devers or Bogarts or Martinez. I mean, those guys are more your prototypical 3-4-5 hitters, so... I guess I can see the case being made for that, but I want to see a little bit more prolonged history of this before I'm ready to move him anywhere.
And I think we will. I mean, I don't think the lineup's going to come out tomorrow against the Rays and suddenly Benintendi's back, but ultimately when he's, you know, right and, you know, his metrics normalize, I guess, you know, I think I'd really like to see him in that two hole myself, but anyway, mine will be, my hero for the series will be Mookie Betts. And, I took quite a bit of flack the last few days, over, Mookie, and, you know, because I've been a huge proponent of selling him, and it's pretty obvious that I'm not going to get my way before the July 31st deadline. I think the Red Sox will go all in. They will make at least one more move. We'll get into that shortly. But he had a 3-home run game on Friday, I believe it was. And instantly, people started chirping me, being like, shame on you. Shame on you for saying we should trade Mookie. When, you know, a few days earlier, everybody was kind of, you know, didn't have strong feelings one way or the other. So I did take a little flack there, but I'm not coming off of, my desire to move him, which hopefully at this point will be in the off season. But anyway, he was 6 for 16, the 3 home runs, one short of the record. He drove in 9 runs altogether and scored 5 runs, so 7 runs, excuse me. So, you know, starting to look more like the MVP we saw last year anyway.
I mean, look, I've said it almost every podcast for 3 months. He needs to be – he doesn't need to be an MVP, but he needs to be something in that direction. He needs to be a guy you can lean on. He needs to be a run producer. He needs to be a run scorer. He needs to be an electric factory. He needs to create chaos on the baseline, and he needs to be – he's always going to play plus defense. I'm not worried about that. But he's been something less than anything close to an MVP candidate, and it's killed us. It's been one of the reasons why we've underwhelmed, along with Chris Sale and the bullpen and the back end of the lineup. It's a serious problem. So for him to come into this series again against this team, and I know their pitching sucks. By the way, if you're a Yankees fan and you're listening to this, spoiler alert, you can't win a World Series with this pitching staff. So – you know, enjoy your AL East championship because that's as far as you're going. But anyways, Betts has to be a 925 OPS 300 guy the rest of the way to give you a chance to overcome some of the shortcomings with the bullpen, all the shortcomings with the bullpen, and then again what we got from Sale tonight. And he was in this series, and I give him a ton of credit. And he's flying around, and he seems happier, and he seems more engaged. And probably now that it's beyond the window of a contract, he can be free and clear of any possibility of worrying about it. And probably no one is talking about it at this point. And he's not going to get traded now because they are in it. So he knows he's going to be here. And I think hopefully that frees him up to be something closer than he was to what he was last year.
And another thing, too, his numbers in the previous series so far this year against the Yankees were not good. And I've long said he's not really a big game guy. His postseason numbers are pretty dismal. So it was also nice to see him break out, you know, explosively in this series to, be a big part of why we took 3 out of the 4. So, Matt, thoughts on Mookie?
He looked really good. I mean, this is what we've been waiting for all year. I mean, he really hasn't shown us the MVP caliber player too often. I mean, we've seen a couple flashes here and there, and really, he's a table setter. He's your leadoff guy. You need him to be that guy that gets on base and comes up and, you know, the thing that made him so dangerous last year and even before that was he was the guy that you could count on for leadoff home runs. I mean, when you have a leadoff home run, that really sets the tone for that inning. So you're seeing that a little bit more now, at least in this series. So hopefully that continues and you can really kind of light it up. They definitely need that. I mean, you've got, I feel like we've seen too often everything's kind of fallen on the shoulders of Devers and Bogarts. You know, without Betts getting on in front of them, it really kind of limits their production. So seeing him go out there and really tear it up, at least, you know, a lot of it came in one game. But that game, he kind of put them on their back and carried them. So it's good to see that, and hopefully that continues.
He also leads the league. As dismal as he might have seemed, he does lead the league in runs scored at 96 on the season. Number two, Rafael Devers at 85. And a lot of batters are right on the heels of Devers. Bogarts is actually one of them. He's just two under that. So if Bogarts and Devers have a big Tampa series, we might have the top three players literally in the entire league right now, American and National, you know, at the top of the runs scored category. But, you know, as close as they are from second to, you know, 10th or so, there's 11 runs between Mookie in first and Devers at second. So he's on a really torrid pace. And, you know, if the power shows up, then, you know, he's just going to be that much more explosive all across the board. And I did hear a stat from Matt Vasgersian not long after they come on the air. In the month of July, he's hitting .378 coming into tonight's game. So continues to, you know, underscore, you know, everything we've basically said. So getting over into zeros, I wasn't sure we were going to do this part of the segment, but we did lose tonight, and there are some people that are worthy of it at this point. So, Jeremy, who is your zero for the series? Heavy side.
Christopher Sale. Get your fucking shit right. Figure it the fuck out. You're getting paid way too much money. You're too talented. You're clearly healthy. Your stuff's there. Like, I don't know what the fuck it is, but figure it out. Figure it out. I'm just exhausted by his failures. Here's his quote. Jason Mastrodonato on Twitter tweeted 26 minutes ago, Chris Sale, colon, quote, "I really sucked the life out of us today," period, close quote. The one thing I respect about Chris Sale is he'll say, he's one of the few athletes that'll say, "I sucked," and own it. But you can only own it so many times before now it's just an eye roll situation. Just be better, bro. Like, you're too talented. You're making too much money. This is ridiculous. Curt Schilling is, for all his political and personality failures, and I'm never going to get into that about that guy, but he was such a do-it, be-about-it guy that I just always respected that. He was such a stopper. You knew that if you had just lost four in a row and it was his turn in the rotation, you weren't going to lose. And then the inverse was always true, that if you won four in a row and it was his turn to pitch, he was going to get you the fifth. That's not Chris Sale. And it's starting to piss me off because he's better than this. He, in my opinion, has the correct mindset, has the correct personality, certainly has the stuff. I think he's healthy. So if it's between the ears, then, you know, go sing Hakuna Matata at Lion King with your kids. I saw the movie. It's fantastic. Go do that. But whatever happens, you got to come back and get people out. This is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You had a chance to propel this team into a chance to maybe even have us talking about the East being a possibility again, and you just lay a fucking dud. It's exhausting. I'm just so fucking frustrated about it. And Matt, when you know, and you're new to the podcast, and we love having you, and you've been hilarious on Twitter, and we love the back and forth, but this is the sort of shit that when you talk about this every third day, grinds you down and makes you pessimistic. Because he has sucked all fucking year. And it's not just in the games against the Orioles. It's in the big games. It's in the stopper moments. It's in the keep the winning streak going moments. He's failed time in and time out, and it's fucking exhausting. So it's hard to believe that this team can get where we want them to go when this motherfucker sucks in all the big moments. I really don't know how else to say about it, and I'm just extremely frustrated with this particular player.
The walks hurt him as much as anything.
Shout out Charlie Midnight for the tweet to ask me to pick Sale, by the way. But I agree, he sucks.
The two walks, you know, ended up coming in on home runs, so not good. And is part of this, could we blame any of this on him being left in the previous game for 116 pitches?
I mean, that could have something to do with it. It's historically, if he goes deeper, and let's be honest, he didn't want to come out of that game. He said, give me three more pitches, and they asked him after the game, why three? He said, yeah, because it only takes three pitches to strike somebody out. I like that ballsy attitude, but it could be. Let me throw out a possibility. Is it possible that Sandy Leone not calling a game correctly and not providing any offense? I'm not really sold on it. I know last podcast I was kind of like, well, maybe we leave him in there if he's pitching well. But four times that he hasn't pitched well, and then he has pitched well this year. And he's had the same guy behind the plate all except for in the beginning of the year when Leone was down in the minors. So maybe it is time to switch it up and see if Vasquez can do something for him, because he's doing okay with E-Rod. He's doing okay with everybody's favorite pitcher, David Price, for the most part, up until recently. You know, he's been doing all right. So maybe they need to switch that up, because it seems like there's some sort of disconnect. The balls aren't – I don't know if he's not framing it. I don't know if it's pitch selection, because let's be honest. If you watch Chris Sale, he never shakes off a pitch. The guy's just out there. Whatever his catcher throws down, that's what he's throwing, and he's on to the next pitch. So it may be some control issues, but if it's a game call, that lays squarely on Sandy Leone. And I don't know, man. It seems like it's just not happening this year. So I guess I'm going to throw some blame there too. And I would like to see what happens with Vasquez behind the plate.
Well, here's the thing, okay? Because I'm Terry knows where I stand. Matt, I think you know where I stand. Obviously, the people that listen to us every third day know where I stand. Here's where it boils down to. It only matters as far as the guy throwing the ball, the way it comes out of his hand, and if it's in the strike zone, and if so, is it in a good location? The rest of that doesn't matter. Who's catching the ball? Who's calling it? Is it in the strike zone, and is it in a corner where it's going to be tough to put a good swing on it? It's major leagues. You're going to give up hits. I don't care if you're corners all night long, you're going to give up 4 to 6 hits. That's major league baseball. But to say that it's the catcher one way or the other, to me, I don't like it. I don't care if you decide to show up to the ballpark and you say, I'm only throwing four seamers tonight. If you're throwing four seamers like Chris Sale can throw at 96, 97, and you're hitting the four corners of the plate and staying out of the middle, you're going to be successful. I don't give a fuck about who's catching it, what other pitches you're showing. If you want to throw a show-me slider or a changeup, your nose out and away so it can't hurt you, and just so you can show something and go back to the fastball. If your fastball is good enough as far as location and action, it doesn't matter. It's coming out of your hand. That's the thing that drives me nuts. And for whatever reason, with this player, people don't want to hold him accountable. They want to say, they want to create ancillary, arbitrary, in my opinion, dialogue about the fucking catcher having a role other than just catching the fucking baseball, throwing it back, and being a presence in the lineup. Now, I get it. I'm not so ignorant to say, well, the play calling doesn't, or play calling football, Jesus. The pitch calling doesn't matter, because it does to some extent, but it's not the primary factor. 90% of a pitcher's success is the way it comes out of his hand. Period, in my opinion. End of story.
Well, you know, Jeremy and I are on different sides of this, and I think it's going to be you two against me for the most part on this issue. Coming into tonight's game, you know, Vasquez, Sale's ERA with him catching is 6.68, 311 with Sandy. That's probably up to 340 or so, you know, after giving up five runs tonight. He has sucked lately in the last couple, I don't know, since early June. Really, no matter who is catching him. Like, there hasn't been a huge difference. The one thing that is constant, though, when Vasquez is catching him, is that his tempo is extremely slow. And when Leon is catching him, he's pitching to his normal pace. So the trust is still a lot stronger with him, with Sandy Leon. Is the location or the results better lately? Not necessarily. But Alex Cora made it known within the last few starts that Sandy Leon will catch him for the rest of the season. And in Christian Vasquez's last start catching Chris Sale, that was a loss, you know, for Sale. And Vasquez crushed a two-run homer, and we lost anyway. So it's, you know, that's probably part of why Cora's not coming off of it. I'm not going to come off of it. I just, he has to pitch to who he trusts. And if that's a flaw in the mind of Chris Sale, then it's a flaw. But, you know, we have to accommodate what suits him at this point. And he, you know, is, I'm not saying he wasn't bad tonight, because we lost this game mostly in part due to Chris Sale, but he did only give up five hits. Two of them went over the fence, you know, for two run shots each. Bradley didn't help matters by botching that throw to first. Would have got us out of the inning. Instead, the ball went over to the dugout, and the Yankees essentially buried us at that point when two more runs came in. But Chris Sale has to pitch better, and he's coming up on the part of the season where he hasn't pitched good since 2015. So I don't know really what to say. You know, I mean, we talked about Porcello. You know, we don't trust him right now, although his last start was nice. Don't really know what to make of David Price. He dominated a team in his last start that he typically dominates, but hasn't looked good as of late. Cashner held up, but, you know, that was against an AL East team that he typically pitches well against. So it's going to be tough to do any damage whatsoever in October without Chris Sale pitching. You know, maybe he doesn't have to be in Cy Young form, but he can't be automatically giving up four or five runs like he has for the most part. So, Mike,
well, the other,
let me just wrap it up with this. When he looked good in his last start, I said, I think in the last show, my confidence in this team rises and falls with Chris Sale's performance. And you know, so go ahead, Jeremy.
One of the things that's deeply concerning about Chris Sale is not just the poor execution of his pitches. It's the balls that are getting turned around on him are absolute missiles. The ball that drove him from tonight's game, was it Maben? Hit a ball right center off the 420 sticker on the in the triangle. You can't, if you're Chris Sale, you just shouldn't be giving up balls hit that hard. I mean, you just shouldn't. You not only are you not fooling people, but they're comfortable in the box to the point where they're going to put a swing on it and have that level of success. Like, that's not who Chris Sale is. Chris Sale makes you uncomfortable. You always have that feeling like if you're a right-handed hitter, that slider is going to hit you in the back foot. Or if you're a lefty, that he's going to have one a two seamer that runs in and on you, and, you know, get you in the wrist or something. Like, you're uncomfortable, and then he throws you the slider off the plate, and because you're worried about the two seamer, you swing and miss and look like a jackass. But that's not what's happening right now. Like, these balls are absolutely ripped. The Maben ball was really just an and ESPN who I think does a shitty job on their broadcast, but I guess that's a podcast for a different time. They did a good thing on this particular swing is they went behind to the Yankees on deck circle and showed a reverse view of that swing. And it just goes to show you how comfortable an average hitter was in that spot and the type of swing he put on the ball. It's just, that's the biggest concerning factor for me is, you know, look, if you're going to get beat by eight, you know, quails, right, or C9 singles, or you're, you know, you just don't have your command, so you got three walks and a starter, whatever may be the case, fine, I can live with that. That used to happen to Pedro all the time. When Pedro wasn't good, it wasn't because he was getting hit all over the place. It was he had an uncharacteristic command, and then he just caught some bad breaks where bleeders got through and quails found a way to get over the shortstop's head, you know, whereas most times those get caught. That's not what's happening to Chris Sale. These balls are absolute missiles. It's a problem. It's an indication that he's not sharp. He's not sharp within the strike zone, and the hitters don't fear him like they did last year.
I think there's one other thing that I noticed tonight. He seemed to go 3-0 on like three quarters of the guys he went against, which is uncharacteristic of him. If you look at him, he's usually a guy that's attacking the zone like crazy and going after hitters, and it seemed like he was trying to nibble around the plate, which is very uncharacteristic of Sal. And you know, you get behind 3-0, and then he grew one, and guys were driving it. So it's a little weird there. I'm not used to seeing him. Normally, it's just dart. The first two innings, it was kind of vintage Sal. It was dart after dart after dart. He's painting the corners. He's just got nasty, filthy stuff. Third inning, it seemed to fall apart, and the crappy version of Sal came back, and he was 3-0, 3-0, 3-0, and these grooving pitches, and guys are driving him. So it's just weird. There's something definitely off this year. I think that's the toughest part because we're used to seeing the innings 1 and 2 Sal like all the time, and he's been more like innings 3 through 6 the majority of the year, where he's walking guys, the control isn't there, he's leaving them over the plate and just getting hammered. I don't know what the answer is. I wish I did. I don't think anybody does. I don't think it's an injury. I mean, it seems like he's still, the velo is still there, everything's still there. It's just the control isn't pinpoint accuracy this year, and to your point, he's getting hit a lot harder, and hopefully figures it out, but I'm starting to get a little bit pessimistic on that.
Well, his fastball has never really had a ton of movement. You know, he's been able to locate it, but it's been his off-speed stuff, specifically his slider, that is so deadly. You know, his slider down and in, you know, the last few years was, for the most part, one of his two out pitches. His other out pitch was the fastball up and away, and guys aren't swinging at that second one. He's not getting guys out on his fastball up and away. When he throws it, it's for a ball. So, you know, when you say you can't find the solution, that's just it. Chris Sale does not have a solution for strike three for the most part, and he's got to figure that out. And you can see him trying to, you know, he's trying to be crafty, but what's been happening in the last several weeks is he's scuffled, and he's had a huge problem with guys fouling off pitches, and it's prolonging the at-bats, and his pitch count has gone up pretty quickly. I mean, you used to be able to count on Chris Sale going 7 full innings, and right now, we're lucky if he gets out of the fifth, you know, with only a few runs scored. And, you know, that's, to me, been the huge difference between the last couple of years and this year.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, something's different. I'd love an answer as to what it is. And even if it is like I'm a mental midget, then that's fine. I'll take that. But the problem with where he's at is that it doesn't seem like there's a fix in place or they're even working towards a fix. It's constantly like, well, I'm going to go out there and give it my best shot. So based on what we've seen, that just leads us to believe that he's going to continue to have good starts against the shitty teams and then underwhelm basically the rest of the time. I mean, he's 5-10. I saw a stat that if he won 667 clip in his starts last year. So he won in games he started. He started 27 starts. You know, they won, you know, what, 16 of them, whatever it was. So out of every three starts, they won two of his starts, whether he got the decision or not. If he was doing that this year, and I want to say it was friend of the program, Chris Smith, tweeted that they would be on pace for 99 wins. So when you talk about the fact that this team is underwhelmed, and if you want to talk about the one person that could have the greatest effect on that being the other way, it's Chris Sale. And to say that there's no answer is hugely problematic in my mind. Hugely problematic. I mean, we've talked about Benintendi's turned the corner, at least in this series. Mookie's been better. Devers is an MVP candidate. Xander's an MVP candidate. JD's been great. The bullpen sucked, but they sucked last year too. So what's the one thing that we can look at and go, if this guy can figure it out, we'll be better? And it's Chris Sale, and he's going, I don't know how to be better. It's exhausting. It's frustrating. I mean, it leads me to believe that this team is destined to get rolled in a wild card game against the fucking Oakland Athletics or Cleveland or Minnesota or whoever the fuck it's going to be. But that's what's going to happen.
It very well could. It could. And, you know, there's nothing we can say that we haven't been saying, you know, for most of the season. It's been more bad than good, you know, for Sale. And hopefully he gets it better. His next start will be against the Yankees. He won't be pitching in this Tampa series. So, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, next weekend, I guess. Matt, who do you have as your zero?
I hate to bang on him for a second straight podcast, but I have to go Nate Eovaldi again. And I really do like Eovaldi. And I thought, you know, I know when we talked on the last podcast, we were saying, well, hopefully, you know, he can pitch. We'll have him around for the Rodriguez start. Well, you know, they definitely did. And the first time he went out there, he pitched an inning. He gave up one hit, struck out one, but didn't give up any runs, didn't walk anybody, and he looked pretty good. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe of all these, he's there. He's knocked the rust off. We're good. Then he came in the Erod start, or after the Erod start, and he pitched one inning and gave up three hits, two earned runs, struck out two, and really kind of made a game of what wasn't much of a game prior to that. So he just doesn't look like he's getting hit a little bit. I don't know if it's still knocking rust off. I don't know what the deal is, but you know, not to really harp on this guy, but he's a guy that the Sox absolutely need to turn things around to solidify that bullpen. I think I mentioned this in the last podcast. If Darwinson Hernandez continues to do what he's done, and he's looked good, and he looked great tonight. Obviously, there were the two runs that were charged. They were unearned runs because of Jackie Bradley Jr.'s errant throw, but I mean, he's looked really good. He's starting to develop into a guy. It sounds like Cora is starting to trust him more and more, and he could be a late inning reliever. So if they can get him in there and continue to progress, and they can get Eovaldi right, that back end of the bullpen looks a lot tougher, and guys kind of seem to fall in place. But Eovaldi just is not. He hasn't put it together. So that rough appearance in the, I think they were up at the time, 9-3 at the time, and he came in and gave up a couple runs and made it 9-5, and I think that was the final score. That's just tough. They just need him to lock it down. These aren't high leverage situations, and maybe that's part of it. Maybe he's better in the higher leverage situations. He's just coming in and mop up duty right now. The two times he's been hit hard, it hasn't really been a game. So maybe he's just out there, just kind of working on things. I really don't know, but it didn't look very good on Saturday night.
I think that, you know, I don't think it's going to get much worse for Eovaldi. I think it's just more a matter of working off some of the rust, you know, being on the mound, facing batters, And, you know, with Sale, I mean, I feel like the bottom can fall out and it could get really bad. But with Evaldi, I think he'll figure it out. And he was fortunate enough to not really have to pitch in a high leverage spot this series. And I'm not too worried about him right now, basically.
Yeah, I mean, same here. Look, if he is almost anybody else, he's getting 4, 5, 6 appearances at Pawtucket. That's not what they did. They sent him down, he got one, and then they said, let's have him available. And the theory was, and I think this has played out, so I feel pretty confident in saying this. The theory was, let's see if we can find some low leverage situations to put him in. But if we need him in a high leverage situation, at least he's on the roster and available. And so what they've done is they've put him in a bunch of games where they're up a touchdown and let him kind of struggle into form, which I think is more valuable than having him go down to Pawtucket and just blow people away. So I like the way they've handled Evaldi. They've continued to put him in situations where he can't lose the game. And, you know, part of that is he's pitching in low leverage situations. So you put him in a high leverage situation, he's going to be a little more goosed, obviously, at that time. And I think you're going to see him be successful. Now, I mean, obviously, I could be wrong on that. But look, I mean, Kimbrel was famous for not being good. And what was it, 2017? He had like a +6 ERA in non-save situations. And then in save situations, he had like a sub-1 ERA. I mean, it's the psychology of closing games is not something that's new to the Boston fan base. Not to say that Evaldi's going through that, but at least he's here. And let's say tonight was a one-run game and we're in the 13th inning and you need a guy. At least Evaldi's here and has the upside to get through that inning. And so I think they've handled it well. And there hasn't been a lot that I think they have handled well, but I think Evaldi's been one of them. So I'm excited to be where he was. I have no issue with the zero. He has not pitched well, admittedly, in spots where he was basically allowed to not pitch well because of the situation. And I give some credit to Alex Cora and you know, the coaching staff for allowing him to get comfortable in those low leverage situations. But I agree with Terry. I'm not worried about Nathan Evaldi. I think his stuff is good enough, and I think that with his elite strike throwing, he's going to not be a problem in the late innings unless he gets hit. So,
yeah, and also, I mean, for everybody that was clamoring for him to be a starter, I think those people should be pretty well resigned that he's right where he's supposed to be at this point. And, you know, so, I don't know. Any more thoughts, Matt, before we move on?
No, the one thing I kind of touched on, and this is a little bit off of Aldi, but what are the thoughts on Hernandez? We've got a guy now that's sitting here, he's pitched now 10 innings, and he's got 22 strikeouts and a 2.7 something ERA so far. The control issues that he had kind of earlier in the season and that people were concerned about have kind of gone away. Is this guy a late inning? Is he a legit late inning guy? Or, I mean, the strikeouts, the K per nine is ridiculous there. What are your thoughts on that?
I think for sure he could definitely be a factor. Tonight he scuffled a little bit, but I think he had some inherited base runners there. And, if you try to start him and he goes 4, 5, 6 innings, the walk rate is through the roof. But I think as a reliever, he can kind of simplify things more. You know, instead of, you know, being overwhelmed by 3 or 4 pitches, he can probably just take his best 2 and kind of hone in on those. And then maybe the third one will come within time. But he's got absolutely nasty stuff. And I'd kind of like to see him, you know, maybe for the next handful of appearances, probably be used more in low leverage, especially with Barnes pitching far better than he had been. And, you know, Workman's been solid for the most part. So I take advantage of, you know, at least a few more low leverage situations. But I think this guy could be one of those lights out guys that kind of comes out of nowhere. So my optimism's high. Jeremy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm instead of pontificating and going into unnecessary duplicative detail, I will say that for once I agree with Terry here.
That's his mandatory one show. I agree with Terry.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't want to agree with Terry. I want to call him an idiot, publicly say he doesn't know what he's talking about, privately text Matt and say he's a moron, but I'm not going to do that on this one.
Oh, fair enough. mine, I can't really, we've hammered on all the bad pitchers. I mean, everybody, Hembree, I guess, gave up an earned run somewhere in there. Wasn't tonight's appearance, but I'll just go with Bradley. You know, it's tough to pick, you know, when you win 3 out of 4. You know, and at the plate, Bradley really, other than tonight, wasn't really too bad. 6 for 16. Scored 5 runs and drove in 3 throughout the series, but he did have a pretty disastrous defensive play where he could have doubled up and picked off a runner. I think it was Luke Voit wouldn't have made it back to first to tag up, and the ball went towards the Red Sox dugout. 2 more runs came in, and that made the score. It was 6-3, which was manageable, but it became 8-3 on that play. And I facetiously tweeted out, trade Bradley after that. And, yeah, so he's my 0.
Go for it, Matt. Jump in. I'll come in after you.
Yeah, honestly, that kind of was the nail in the coffin tonight. But outside of that, it's real tough to pick, to your point, to pick many zeros in the series. They, up until tonight, and even tonight, as ugly as they were, it was still only three-run loss, and they still put up some decent numbers and had some opportunities. It was real ugly, but it's tough to pick that many zeros on in a series where they basically shellacked the Yankees 3 out of 4 games.
Absolutely. We don't really have to waste much time on Bradley.
I'll say this about Brad. Okay, just quickly.
Yep.
I think he sucks offensively, and I think his value defensively is so, it's like state run propaganda, his defense. So, I mean, look, yes, he's a good defensive player. Is it worth his pathetic runs offensively? No, it's not. And then he does what he did tonight, which was scramble out of the pocket like Tom Brady and then throw a ball into the flat with no one at first base. It cost you 2 runs and took you out of a chance to get back in the game. So if you're going to be the defensive guy that is worth it no matter what he gives offensively, you just can't do that. I mean, and that's just tonight's game. So, I mean, he did make some nice plays. The same ball that I was talking about with that drove Sale from the game, he played that into a double, which is that ball should have easily been a triple. He played it really well. I mean, he is a good defensive player and all those sorts of things, but he just sucks offensively. And he was overmatched in the ninth against I'm spacing it. Jesus, Terry, jump in here. What's this? Who's the closer? Why am I forgetting the closer? Chapman. Jesus Christ, Jeremy, fix it here. But anyways, he just was overmatched. I thought he had some bad at bats in this game, and I have no confidence when he's at the plate. And then you can't be the guy who's so good defensively that it doesn't matter what he does offensively, and then throw a ball into the dugout. So, anyways.
I almost thought that maybe he threw it away thinking the inning was over, forgot how many outs there were. But I don't think he did. But, I mean, it was just like, it was a weird enough play that it was one of the questions, you know, that ran through my head. But nonetheless.
He pointed to first. Bogarts did and was yelling for him to throw to first. The problem was Hernandez didn't cover first. He wasn't backing it up. And I think Bradley Jr. took a quick look and thought the the first base coach for the Yankees was Moreland. Not that they look anything alike, but and he just fired it in there, quick glance. That's what they were saying, and I mean, that kind of shit happens. It's not. It was ugly. It's not what you want to see, but they had plenty of other opportunities to win this game. I mean, it sucks. It definitely did drive the nail in the coffin, but
yeah, absolutely. Getting into some stuff that we're kind of looking ahead to as far as transactions, trades, whatnot. Buster Olney at the start of the ESPN broadcast tonight speculated that the Red Sox were very much going to be active, you know, on the trade market, and he felt one more big move was coming. So can we all agree that that's probably a reliever at this point?
I don't see where else it could go.
It better fucking be. That's all I'll say about that.
Who can we expect? I mean, was it Buster that also speculated it could be Edwin Diaz from the Mets, who was one of their big acquisitions? So that's one possibility. Shane Green is still out on the market, as is Kirby Yates. There probably are some outside the box. Will Smith was a guy I liked, but it looks more and more like the Giants are not going to be dealing anyone. They had a good weekend, taking 2 out of 3 from the Padres. So, I mean, who do we want at this point to come in and pitch a late inning?
The name does not matter. Here's what I want. An elite swing and miss guy. That's all. His name can be Joe, it can be Paula, it can be Victor, I don't care what his fucking name is. Just find the guy and get him here. We need a swing and miss arm. And I don't care if it's on fastballs, sliders, changeups, knuckle curves, wiffle balls, sponge balls, I don't care. It's got to be a swing and miss guy at a high rate. And then that's all I care about. And I the name doesn't fucking matter. It just doesn't. That's what this bullpen needs. And it's, unfortunately, the problem is we probably need two of them, but you're just not going to get two of them. But that's what it has to be. The name just doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of, there's a lot of factors here that are coming into play. I mean, we do not want to exceed that, or I should say the Red Sox do not want to exceed that third luxury tax threshold, which apparently we're under by about $6 million. Kirby Yates by far has more strikeouts than anyone. Well, I shouldn't say by far. Brad Hand is just a little behind him, but he's with the Padres, and Matt, you saw an article from NBC Sports that thought Chavis and Hernandez were basically their asking price.
Yeah, the report was NBC Sports Boston, and they were talking about how Padres essentially want the equivalent to or better than what the Yankees received for Andrew Miller when they traded him to Cleveland and got Clint Frazier, or the trade where they sent Chapman and got Gleyber Torres. And what they were throwing out, and this may have been speculation on the part of NBC Boston, was that it would be Darwin's and Hernandez, Chavis, and I believe the package would be centered around those guys. They could throw in like a Bobby Dalbec or a Tristan Casas or something. I mean, those are the main names that are being thrown around. There's not a lot in the system right now. Most of the guys that they have are things have kind of changed with the way that the teams are looking at prospects these days. At this point, they're looking for guys who are major league, right on the cusp of being major league ready. And I think a lot of that is there's all these promising prospects, especially on the pitching end of things, that are just hyped up, and the hype train is huge, and then they never play. I mean, we can see some of the guys that the Red Sox have traded away in past years as far as pitchers, whether it be like a Casey Pelly or it be an Anderson Espinosa or guys like that, but they're really high-end prospects, but they're at like single A or, you know, high A or whatever it is, and they blow their arms out and they just don't make it. And so they're looking for the guys that are either in the majors that are young and controllable, or they're looking right on the cusp of being in the majors. So those are the names that they were throwing out. You know, the guys I've seen the Red Sox tied most to, or the most articles on as far as the rumor goes, are Diaz, and that's kind of been gaining a little bit more traction, and he seems to be the hot name more lately. Yates was the guy before that, and then Ken Giles and Daniel Hudson were the other guys. I haven't really seen them tied too much to Shane Green or Will Smith, and there's a lot of thoughts that Smith may not be traded now because of the hot streak that the Giants are on. So Diaz, kind of the thought process there is he's young, he's controllable. They've got him signed through 2022. So, yes, they'd have to give up some premier prospects for him. But the thing is he'd fit under their salary constraints for the next 4 or 5 years. He's having kind of a down year. I know that Dombrowski was definitely in on him prior to the Mariners trading for him in the offseason. The Red Sox were kind of being tied to that. So there's a possibility, if he's available, that Dombrowski may go out and get his guy. What they have to throw down and get him, you know, you may see that they throw out a Bobby Dalbec or a Durbin Feltman or a Tristan Casas, somebody like that, you know. I don't think that I'd want to pull the trigger, me personally, for Chavis, for Hernandez. I think we've seen enough promise there, and they're helping the team currently enough that I don't know that you derail that progress by sending them off someplace else. So it'll be interesting. I'm not really sold on Giles. He's a guy that kind of punches himself in the face. That's kind of not the guy that I want as my closer. I kind of want somebody with some composure that seems like he can handle the big situation, not a guy that's, you know, punching himself in the mouth as he goes in the dugout. It's typically not one of the characteristics I look for. I know that there was some talk that they may try to package he and Hudson together. Hudson's having a great year. Giles is having a great year this year, but last year both were trash. And, you know, I like to see the guys with track records. This year, you know, Diaz is kind of having a trash year. As far as the ERA, he's given up a little bit more on the home runs, the runs. The ERA is just south of 5 right now, which is kind of ugly. But, I mean, last year it was sub 2 with a .79 whip, which is incredible. And the guy struck out 124 batters in 73 innings and had 57 saves. He's still striking out over 35% of the batters. So if they can swing a deal and get rid of some obviously they're going to have to give up some high-level guys. They might be able to get him a little bit lower than, you know, normal because he is having kind of an off year. But if they can get him and get him under control till 2020 without having to trade either Chavis or Hernandez, then, you know, honestly, I look at Dalbec and Tristan Casas, and I'm like, you already have third baseman, you have corner infielders locked up between Chavis and Devers, so they're a little bit more expendable. Maybe you pull the trigger and get a closer for the next 5 years, 4 years, whatever it is, and I'd be okay with that.
Well, I mean, I'm definitely not putting Michael Chavis in any deal whatsoever. I mean, we've got a couple high-end prospects, you know, double A, triple A, you know, between Feltman and Lakins. I was just looking at Feltman's last 10 games, and he has got knocked around a little bit, but these are guys that are going to be up late this year or no later than next spring. So I'm not too concerned about, you know, getting somebody who has a ton of control left. Diaz has 3 years remaining after this year. His first year of arbitration will actually be next. But, I mean, he pitched in a very safe ballpark in Seattle with no pressure whatsoever. Gets traded to the Mets. And I know it's a circus there, but he should be pretty solid, you know, and he hasn't been in a big market. Giles, another guy, having a very good year, unlike Diaz, but struggled really bad with Houston, was terrible in the 2017 postseason. That's how the legend of Charlie Morton kind of came to be, with him getting some long relief. And then the next season, Giles basically, you know, just never got it together. And there was one appearance, I don't know if it was before or after he punched himself in the face, but he threw another dud, went back in the dugout, and you could see him say to AJ Hinch, "Oh, fuck you." You know, so that guy's a punk, and I want no part of him in Boston, you know, where he does have a record of not being able to handle, you know, pressure and a big market. I like Yates a lot, but I would not meet the asking price of Chavis and Hernandez in that deal. And, you know, and I like Yates' stuff the most. He didn't really emerge until last year. He had a 2.14 ERA. He was well above four, you know, in the seasons previous to that. And, but, you know, 2.14 last year, a 1.07 ERA this year, and he's got one more year of control, and he leads all closers in strikeouts. So that's the sexy guy that's out there, in my opinion. But if we're going to get him, I think it's going to be after 3:30 p.m. on the 31st, which is Wednesday. Deadline's at 4 p.m., and it'll be late in the process, and I think if we do get him, it's going to be because the Padres know that no one's going to meet their asking price. There are enough guys out there that make the market saturated enough that will probably force the Padres to come down at least a little bit, but I don't know how it's going to shake out. And Shane Green isn't probably Jeremy's candidate because he's not a strikeout guy for the most part. But, you know, one of the more solid guys, and he's a rental. The Tigers can't really ask for a whole lot. I would settle for Shane Green if it came to it.
And I forgot that NBC sports piece, they actually suggested that the starting point for Gates might be Andrew Benintendi, which not only would I say no, but it would be fuck no. There's no chance in hell I would ever give up Benintendi for anything, especially a reliever. They kind of grow on trees. Benintendis do not.
I've been vehemently against the trade Andrew Benintendi brigade. It's not a huge brigade, but I have seen fans mention that, you know, maybe he is a little expendable, and I wouldn't move him for anything right now.
I mean, he's not untradeable, but you'd have to get an absolute haul for him. And if you think going in this season to win a World Series to trade Benintendi is the move, you're an absolute dumb person, because you can't. You're not good enough. I mean, you're not good enough. So why would you lose the next potentially 8 years of Benintendi for what? Two bullpen arms, a couple of prospects, and a fourth outfielder? No. Especially when you're selling low, when he's only a 777 OPS. No, not having it. Now, if you got one team out there that's stupid and wants to give you you know, a starting outfielder, a starting pitcher, two bullpen arms, and two prospects, fine. But that's not going to happen. The league generally is attempting to set a better market, and so there's just you're not seeing a ton of overspending, especially in prospects. So I mean, it is what it is. But I'll take anybody if it means we can replenish what has been stripped down to nothing as far as the farm system. And Benintendi is not untouchable. Now, he's as close to untouchable as anybody else, and I don't think he's going to move anywhere. But I mean, look, if you can get a haul for anybody, I'd do it. I mean, you know, the guy is Mookie, though. That's the guy I'm looking at to get the haul. But as far as the bullpen, I mean, look, you guys are better at the prospects than me. I'll admit it. I'm not in New England anymore, so I can't stay up to date on, you know. And I used to go to Pawtucket, and I used to do a better job with Portland and everything else, but nowadays I just don't know the prospects other than the main guys. So I'll just leave that to you, other than to say that I'm steadfast in my belief that the thing that this bullpen needs more than anything is a swing and miss guy, and I probably two of them. So, but look, everyone else is trending in the right direction, but for Chris Sale. So let's see what happens here, you know. And maybe you can overcome the bullpen just like you did last year if it does fall right. So.
The Yankees probably are a little more frustrated today than they were yesterday. Marcus Stroman has been traded to the Mets for a package that centers around a couple of pitching prospects. I think that's hilarious because, you know, they're basically being held for ransom at this point as far as New York goes. Like, Brian Cashman. I don't know why I keep watching. Maybe it's because we got the pitcher. But Brian Cashman probably hates having zero control over being able to go after the biggest name out there. And he can't because he's with the Mets. And they haven't done a trade since 2001. And he talked about wanting Scherzer, but the Nats are back in it, and they might even compete for the division. So they're probably pretty frustrated. I'm sure they had at least one more chance to beat the Mets' offer for Stroman before they ultimately passed on him and didn't do it. And so, I don't know. They must be in at this point on Trevor Bauer or Robbie Ray. And if you guys didn't see this yet, Bauer gave up 7 runs today to the Royals. Francona starts heading to the mound to get him and to take the ball from him. But Bauer turns around towards center field and launches the ball from the pitcher's mound over the center field wall. Francona yells at him, and Bauer left. So, it's just kind of hilarious right now what's going on. And the Yankees, I mean, Jeremy, you say we need 2 relievers. They might need 2 starters. CC Sabathia just went on the DL today. Tanaka hasn't pitched well against us. Paxton's been scuffling. Hap has been a disaster all season long, so that's a team that's probably got a higher level of anxiety than any other team right now.
Here's the thing about the Yankees. They are clearly the best team in the East as far as 162-game season. I take nothing away from what they're accomplishing. I still think the Red Sox have a better chance of winning the World Series, and I give them zero chance to win the East. And someone out there saying, well, Jeremy, you're a moron. That doesn't make any sense. Well, maybe I am a moron, but it does make sense because one team has top-end pitching, at least in the starting rotation, and one team has almost no pitching. And if Severino's not going to be back and give you something, then you're legitimately fucked. And now that Stroman's off the table, I mean, and the Mets aren't going to give the Yankees Syndergaard, where do you go to drastically improve the starter rotation? So look, they're going to win the East. I don't even look at the East standings anymore, but I'd give them a 0% chance to win a World Series. I mean, they just don't have the horses in a long series to win. I don't think they can beat Cleveland, because I think Cleveland will ultimately win the Central. I don't think they can beat Cleveland. I think if the Sox win the wild card playing game and get into a short series, I don't think they can beat the Red Sox, and I do not, and I know they can't beat the Astros. So I just don't see them as candidates, and I think you're dead on right, Terry. One starting pitcher is probably not enough. I mean, they just don't have the horses. So, which by the way warms my heart because I love watching them suck, and I also love watching their fans get false hope right before they crash and burn. Scumbag fan base.
And their window
I don't disagree.
Shortening. I'm just saying they got a shorter window. But go ahead, Matt.
Matt, you disagree?
No, I was going to say I don't disagree with anything you said. I don't think they're built for the playoffs. I mean, they have an elite bullpen, and they stocked up on those bullpen arms. But what good does that do you if your rotation goes out and they play like they did against the Red Sox, and you know they're done by the third inning and it's already 7-0 or 9-0 or whatever it is? You know, it's just not going to do you any good. And whether it's the Red Sox, or it's the, you know, the Astros, I mean, there's firepower on those two teams that they'll light up your starters real quick. Cleveland just is so deep in their rotation that, you know, it's tough. They may not have the offense, but they're going to be able to hang with them. And I think they have a good chance to beat the Yankees in the series. I think the Twins have the firepower offensively to beat them as well. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see where some of these guys go. I think everybody knows the Yankees their backs are up against the wall. I do know that the Blue Jays had asked for Debbie Garcia, or however you pronounce his first name, who's an elite pitching prospect, and he was in the futures game. He's one of the best pitching prospects in all of baseball, and that's who everybody seems keyed in on for the Yankees. And the Yankees don't seem to want to part with him. Well, you know, these guys are starting to go off the board, and I think you will see. I think they're going to probably land Robbie Ray, and if I had to guess, I do think they'll get another guy. It's possible they go back to their old boy Lance Lynn, or somebody like maybe a 1A or a 1B, something like maybe a Mike Minor. I could even see him getting Castillo. But they're going to have to pay up. All these teams know that, hey, the Yankees are hard up. I mean, yes, people know that the Red Sox are hard up for bullpen options, but at the same time, the Red Sox have kind of positioned themselves smartly where Dombrowski can say, hey, you know, of all these knocking the rust off, we have all these guys getting healthy. Brian Johnson's coming back. We got guys coming back. We have guys. They've been pitching better. We don't need it. And that's actually what Dombrowski came out and said the last couple of days. He's been beating that drum as, we don't really have any holes in our team. We think we're pretty good. We're coming together well, and we don't know that we need to add anybody. And it may be smoke. It's a smart play, I think, on his part if it is, because, I mean, we all know that they need some more bullpen help. Outside of Workman, there's nothing. But, you know, if he can convince these other guys that he's not bluffing, he's not looking for bullpen arms, then, you know, it kind of drives down the price a little bit. The Yankees can't do that. They just got annihilated by the Red Sox, and everybody and their brother knows that they need some rotational help. And with CC going down, and it doesn't look like, I don't think Severino's coming back. If he does, it may be a situation where he's just pitching out of the bullpen. I think there's more to that problem than they're letting on to. But, I mean, you basically have Herman, Tanaka, Paxton, who's been terrible. You don't have any legit frontline starters on that entire staff. So, I think that everybody knows they've got them backed up, and it may deplete their farm system, which is fantastic. I think it's great if they have to sell, and I'd love to see them get a Zach Wheeler and then have Wheeler, you know, have health issues or whatever and have it not work out and have to mortgage the whole farm for it. It'd be nothing better than that.
I think Robbie Ray makes the most sense. I mean, he'd be a number two in most rotations. He's had a sub-4 ERA and just barely a sub-4 ERA in two out of the last three. And then 2017, he was basically the ace of the Diamondbacks staff. I think he was the starter for the one-game wild card that they were in. But he's a lefty, and that plays well, you know, for the Red Sox because we got a lot of lefties in our lineup. So I think that might be one of the things they consider. You mentioned Mike Minor and Lance Lynn. They've already tried the Lance Lynn thing, you know. So I think they would go with Minor on that one. And they're both Texas Rangers, so they're dealing with the same team. Minor's actually been pretty stout this year. He's got exactly a 3.00 ERA, but he has gotten tagged for 4 runs in his last 3 starts. So I'm not sure if he's kind of hit a wall yet, but he could potentially be a guy that they get on the cheap. And he's also a lefty as well. So definitely a couple of interesting names. And also the Astros, as I was texting with Jeremy earlier, they're going to be in on most of the same guys the Yankees are because Syndergaard, the asking price for him is astronomical, and the Astros have had a really good pitching program, and they can turn a number 5 starter like Wade Miley or Charlie Morton into a number 3, and they can take a guy like Robbie Ray and probably make him a bona fide ace. You know, they just have a really good pitching program, and guys seem to really, you know, elevate their games down there. And Gerrit Cole was an ace anyway, but he's been murdering people with strikeouts the last couple of years. Last I checked, he was leading the league this year in strikeouts. So if he's not currently, he's definitely top 2 or 3. And, you know, so it's going to be kind of interesting to see those two teams outmaneuver each other because most likely, that's probably the ALCS matchup, you know, depending on how things shake out.
Just there's a piece that just came up just here in the last couple hours on Bleacher Report talking about how basically the Yankees are the Stroman deal escalated their needs and how it's kind of backed them up. And, you know, it looks like they're saying Syndergaard is more than likely, and I've read a couple of reports that he's going to the Padres. They have the prospects. They wanted him in the offseason. Part of the Stroman deal was to potentially flip some of those guys to get, you know, get the Stroman deal, they were going to they wanted to get Stroman and be able to use Syndergaard to get some prospects back. And they're saying now that they don't think the Giants or the Indians are going to trade Bumgarner or Bauer, respectively. So and a couple of guys have no trade clauses to the Yankees, Grinke and Minor. But they're talking about how basically Boyd, Matthew Boyd, they're looking for. The Tigers want a package that starts with Gleyber Torres. So they've been kind of kicking that one away, and the Reds want even more than that for Castillo. So it's going to be tough. It looks like the most likely are probably Robbie Ray, Zach Wheeler, Lance Lynn, Minor, or Tanner Roark. So, which I've got to be honest with you, as a Red Sox fan, none of those names really strike fear deep into my heart.
I'm surprised the Tigers would want Gleyber Torres, where he's probably got, I'm guessing, 4 years of control or so left. You know, you'd think they'd just want a high-end prospect that they'll have 6 or 7 years with. But had a thought, but I slipped my mind apparently. Oh, Davey Garcia, that's the Yankees' top pitching prospect. He went 7 scoreless today, and in 22 starts this year, he's got like a 2.24 ERA. So I don't even know if I want to deal him, you know, if I'm the Yankees. You know, that sounds pretty good, but he's going to be the prospect that all the other teams want. So we'll see. Why don't we just go ahead and get into this Tampa series before we wrap here. The only matchup we know of is tomorrow, David Price versus Charlie Morton. Rick Porcello goes in game two against the TBA. And then, Porcello game two, and then Andrew Cashner game three. So both of those guys have TBAs, probably going to be an opener. Snell is on the DL for, they said, 8 weeks. He's got loose bodies in his elbow. That's what they said for Eovaldi, that he'd be 6 to 8 weeks, and it was like 12 weeks. So Snell could be lost for the season. I'm not sure what Tyler Glasnow's status is, but he's not back as of yet, and it could be a little while. So with Price and Morton, this is Price's first game back, you know, at Fenway since the Eckersley controversy. He did pitch well against the Rays in his previous start. Charlie Morton also pitched well against us. How do you guys see this one playing out?
Well, before the Yankees series, I would say loss, loss, loss. But at this point, I see loss, loss, win. Or loss, win, loss. They're going to lose the David Price start. He sucks. He's a piece of shit. Morton's going to beat us Tuesday. And then you got Porcello Cashner, who, I mean, are basically one and the same at this point. So I'm cautiously optimistic that we don't get swept. But I expect that if the pitching's good with the Devil Rays, we're going to come kind of back to where we've been for most of the year, which is underwhelming. So I have them losing 2 out of 3 in this series, with game one being a 100% dud loss because Price sucks.
Yeah, I also actually failed to mention that there was a trade today between the Rays and the Indians. The Rays sent Hunter Wood, who has a 2.48 ERA in their bullpen, so kind of curious as to why he would get moved. And then they sent Christian Arroyo also to the Indians, and he was acquired in the Evan Longoria deal. So I'm just wondering what the Rays' mindset is at this point. You know, are they could be blowing it up, and not blowing it up, but they might be giving up on the season, I guess, is the better way to put it. So I don't know. I think we could easily take 2 out of 3 here and possibly sweep them as well. You know, I we're hot right now, and the Rays are not, and we're at Fenway, and I don't know. I'm saying 2 out of 3. Where are you at with it, Matt?
Kind of waffle between 1 out of 3 and 2 out of 3. I think that Morton beats Price. My guess is that Porcello and Cashner, the guys are mainly going to go against, are probably going to beat Beats and Yarbrough. They beat up on Beats pretty decently last time. Yarbrough, I don't know if he pitched against them or not.
He might be on the DL, actually. Oh, no, that was, never mind. That was Stanek or whatever. Yeah, so you could be right.
Yeah, so my guess is it's going to be those guys. Chirinos just pitched today, and he got smacked around pretty good. So he's not in line. So those are my guesses, that it'll be those guys will be the main guys. They'll probably have openers or do whatever the hell it is that the Rays do. They kind of just random with whatever the hell it is out there. Their openers and how they just start guys sometimes and use openers other times. I don't know. But those would probably be the two that'll get the meat of the rotation, the starts rather. I do know that Glasnow is still a couple weeks out. They just announced today he's like 2 weeks out still from returning. So definitely won't be him. But, you know, I'm going to be optimistic and go 2 out of 3 on this. Not wildly optimistic. I think my initial, I had it as Price is a loss, Porcello is a loss, and then Cashner is the win. But I'll go, you know what, Price is, much as I don't think, for whatever reason, I just think he's kind of due. But I don't know, some pairings, either Price or Porcello, one of the two will pull out a win, and I think Cashner is good for a win. To your question of whether they were selling off, I also read the reason they traded those guys away, the Rays traded those guys away, they're trying to make room on their 40-man roster because they are going to have Glasnow coming back. They have a couple guys coming off the DL, so they're trying to adjust. So one guy was somebody that had just cleared waivers that they traded away, and then they were trying to move a couple other guys off their main roster just to make room for these guys coming off in the next couple days.
Yeah, well, if we win tomorrow with Price, my optimism goes up pretty high. So, you know, we'll see, I guess. I just think we're catching them at a really good time, and for the most part, everything's clicking with us. And, you know, the Yankees series after this one in New York is a little concerning, but I think we can do a little bit of damage here. You know, last three games of the homestand.
It's been real hard to kind of predict because, I mean, here we were coming out of the Baltimore series. We're all ready to sell, and they look like absolute dumpster fire. And they're losing teams they shouldn't be. And then all of a sudden they go on a tear against the Rays and the Yankees, and we're like, all right, they're back. But it's tough to predict what they're going to do. I can see all the bats going cold and then all of a sudden getting lit up. This team has been so wildly inconsistent. I want to believe that what we saw over the last two series is, you know, that it's more like what we saw in 2018 and they're putting it together. But as much as I think that, you know, you see some of the ugly play tonight and it's like, man, I'm a little deflated just on that because it seems like going into the series, you can't have that ugly play this late in the year when everything's a must win. Can't be throwing the balls into the dugouts and just missing plays. And I don't know. It's tough. I'd like to say that I'm confident that this will continue, but I'd be lying if I said that.
Jeremy, any final thoughts?
Terry, I want to believe and hope that your comment that they're just the teams are trending in certain directions makes sense as far as the Double Rays struggling and the Red Sox trending, you know, as far as beating the Rays, beating the Yankees. And we don't even know the matchups, right? But I don't like the David Price start, and then I just feel like a Porcello Cashner split is what's going to happen. So, I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I mean, look, I'm a huge Red Sox fan. I watch a lot of it. Obviously, I'm on this podcast. I want them to win. I try to be as realistic as possible. I try to avoid blind homerism. And I just feel like that's the way this is going to go. But I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I hope I'm wrong. I hope Price can bounce back. And then if he does, then the same split means you win 2 out of 3. And I'm okay with that, obviously. So, you know, my mind is telling me one thing. My heart is hoping for another thing. And I hope you're right that the teams are trending in directions that favor the Red Sox.
Yeah, and I think where we've seen Morton recently, you know, just, you know, 5 starts ago or whatever, 5 games ago, I think that will play into us a little bit better. We hit Chirinos much better. The second time around, I'm just looking, and we have tagged, let's see, last April 20th, we put up 5 runs against Morton previously, so it can be done. You know, we just don't need Price to suck, and if worse comes to worse, and he does, though, I hope they boo the absolute shit out of him, and you know, to the point where he has to have another press conference. I wonder who the announcers are, actually, if it's going to be Eckersley or Remy. I'm assuming Remy, but who knows. But anyway, Yankees, I just checked, they have a weird, they have tomorrow off, and then they have two games against the Diamondbacks, who they are probably catching at the right time. So, so tomorrow, it's just all about us. You know, we can only gain a half a game, but we'll take it. Oh, and actually, the Yankees have Grinke, though, so that'll be interesting. That's a 1 p.m. game on Wednesday. But, all right, good show, guys, and we'll be back on Wednesday.
I agree. Matt and I were awesome. Terry, you got some things to worry about. I'll send you a text. But otherwise, we'll see everyone Thursday night. I can't help myself. Sorry.
That's fine.
Have a good one, guys.
I'll hit a grand slam off you on Wednesday, Jeremy.
Yeah, sure you won't. Bye.
Take care.
A little bit of banter to end the show. 3 out of 4 against the Yankees and the Red Sox will be buyers, towards 4:30 on, 4 p.m. on Wednesday, which is one of my favorite days of the year, by the way. That is just so exciting. I don't know how many times I refresh my Twitter feed, MLB trade rumors. It's the most exciting day of the year. So stuff might happen, before then, tomorrow, Tuesday. So all of us will be active on Twitter, and hopefully the Red Sox make a sneaky good move. What if they get Robbie Ray? What if they go starting pitcher again? Doesn't make sense, but what has so far in 2019? So we will see what happens, and like I said, be back with you on Wednesday. Have a good start to your work week. Take care.
This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Swing it, a line drive, left field, Benintendi coming on, dives, and then he makes the catch. He did! He got it!
Here we go. It's time to party. Right here. 3-2.
Championship.
Welcome to Benny and the Bets Podcast.
Can you believe it?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.